Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Jose Youngs here, MMAfighting.com, here with another episode of the A-Side Live Chat. Sitting next to me is, of course, Pete Carroll. Pete, what's it like to be drunk on a Wednesday?
Well played, sir. Amazing, to be honest. I don't know why more people don't do it.
Yeah. Well, it's only 11 o'clock a.m. where I am. It's probably, I don't know what time it is over there for you, but it doesn't really matter. I just assume you're drunk no matter what time of the day it is.
It's drinking time every time.
Someday when Niall is on this show, it's going to be me just trying to coerce this conversation into a not drunken rant about God knows what.
You need to get a translator if Noel McGrath ever does the show.
That's very true. That is very true. People say, what is Pete saying? What's this and that saying? Like, man, you don't even know. Pete's one of the coherent ones in this world.
Trained in, exactly. Yeah, I've been doing this for years. This lad doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, so people ask for Niall to be on the show. You don't know what you're asking for. But, of course, we have a lot of questions this time, Pete. Last episode, a week ago, we did our end-of-the-year picks and such and this and that. Didn't get a lot of questions, but we did have a great conversation. I haven't read the questions yet, but I'm seeing a lot of questions. So without further ado, of course, if you want to ask a question, you can go on MMAfighting.com, leave a question in the comment section, or use hashtag the ASAT on Twitter. You can complain about Pete Carroll because apparently that's all you guys want to do. People think Pete's one of the meanest men in the media.
Why is he cursing so much? I don't like it. Very sorry, guys. Just hope I don't ruin your morning with my foul language.
Well, Pete, you ruin everyone's morning whether you speak or not.
That's true. And Brian Tucker knows all about that. Hi, Brian.
Well, without further ado, we're going to jump right into the questions. This one from Zakuko Keggy, longtime commenter, has a lot of people want to talk about this one. It's kind of generated a little bit of a conversation below his comment. So, UFC 246. This card feels like the perfect ESPN card, not a pay-per-view card. And they raised the price. If it wasn't your job, would you still buy this card? Yes, I would, because Conor McGregor is fighting Donald Cerrone, and that is a phenomenal fight. But I'll pull up this card and this fight card in general. I was having this conversation with someone a little while ago that it feels like a boxing card where it's a very big main event and then a lot of good fights below it, but it's not stacked like we saw UFC 239, UFC 235, even UFC 245, UFC 244, and so on and so forth. But the main event is, of course, Conor McGregor versus Donald Cerrone, a non-title fight welterweight bout. The co-main event is Holly Holm and Raquel Pennington, and then after that, the rest of the main card is Alexei Oleinik and Maurice Greene, Claudia Gadelha versus Alexa Grasso, and then Anthony Pettis versus Carlos Diego Fajeda. That is the main event of the pay-per-view card that they raised the price. So, PC Carroll, if it wasn't your job, would you still buy UFC 246?
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah. There's a reason why this is one of the few cards they've made pay-per-view in the UK and Ireland as well. They know people are going to pay for it. Like, a lot of the times, I feel like people get upset with the pay-per-view in the UK and Ireland for UFC because it's just new. We've never had to pay for it before, so there's always going to be that people kind of pushing against that being brought through. But, you know, I saw far more of it when people were asked to pay for Khabib v. Dustin and, say, John Jones v. Thiago Santos, I believe they had to pay for two. There was a lot more pushback against that. But I guess ever since this model was rolled out, we had a good idea that it would be the McGregor fights that we'd be charged for. So I think everybody's happy enough with that. Again, the card, the criticism of the card, I can remember similar criticism of 202 before that happened as well. And that was a phenomenal card. And to be honest, I think we can get people a bit more interested in some of the fights in this card. Like, we've been talking about Tim Elliott v. Askar Askarov for weeks.
I am so hyped for that fight. And that's on ESPN Plus. That's an early prelim card.
And friend of the channel, Brian Keller, is also fighting on the early prelims as well. So I feel like that's really good. But even more so at the prelims. Modafferi v. Barber is a huge test of experience against the young gun. And we have another one of those in Andre Feely v. Sadiq Yusuf. That's a fantastic fight. Like, Yusuf's look insane. He's been on my radar ever since he was a teenager and he was training in that Lloyd Ervin team. Remember, they were just all those young guns trained together. I remember him from back then. He was only 16 at the time. And also Drew Dober and Nasrat Haqparast. Haqparast has had a huge, huge kind of entry into the UFC. I think he's 3-0. And I haven't, like, apart from select few guys like GSP and Rory McDonald, I've never seen Faraz Zahabi saying this guy is a future world champion. He has said that about Nasrat Haqparast. So I'm very intrigued about the Afghani-born German ahead of this fight.
Yeah, and even, like, if you look at the early prelims, like, Sabina Mazo versus J.J. Aldridge is the first fight of the card, and I've been a big proponent of Sabina Mazo, former LFA veteran, and the J.J. Aldridge is, I believe, one of Rose Namajunas' training partners, so does have the loss to Macy Barber, but she was looking really good until she wasn't. I remember similar criticism for UFC 242, the Habib Poirier card, but the co-main event was Felder Barboza, and then the rest of the card has, like, Islam Makhachev versus Davi Ramos. The Curtis Blaydes fight was on the main card. That was a really good fight, and then Carlos Diego Fajeda and Taizimov was also on the main card. So that ended up being a really good card, but again, like, you brought up UFC 202. I believe the co-main event was Rumble Johnson and Glover Teixeira. That fight was like 13 seconds. We had Cowboy Cerrone, Rick Story, where Cowboy had, like, that combination finish with the head kick. And then you had, you had Mike Perry's UFC debut on short notice, and then Tim Means and Saba Hamasi, I want to say, by TKO. So that was the main card. That's a really good main card. Didn't look
how
great.
How do you remember this stuff off the top of your head? It's absolutely ridiculous. I always, every week, I'm like, how is he remembering every fight on the main card of these events that happened years ago?
So people ask me that, and I just remember where I was and who I talked to at Media Day and then what my angle was for the fight. So obviously have you been in the T-Mobile Arena? Correct?
Yeah.
So I had the media box seats. I didn't have octagon side for that. So I just remember looking down into the octagon for those fights. And I also remember Cody Garbrandt knocked out Takei Mizugaki faster than Dominic Cruz knocked out Takei Mizugaki. And then he looked up and was, like, yelling up at Dominic Cruz, who was in the Fox booth at the time. And then that also had Lorenz Larkin and Neil Magny, because Lorenz Larkin just beat the soul out of Neil Magny. And then a young upstart named, not even a young upstart, a young welterweight named Colby Covington fought on the Fight Pass prelims against Max Griffin, and I think finished him. I don't remember how I know he won, but I don't remember how he won. But that was UFC 202. That was a really good card. So for all we know, in a couple years from now, we could be talking about Brian Kelleher versus
Askarov.
Yeah, Askarov. Kelleher versus Osborne. Chas Kelly is on this. Andre Feely, I remember speaking to him at the UFC Phoenix card here, and he said that was February 2019, and he said by the end of 2019 he would be champion. Obviously, it didn't work out because he only had one fight since then.
He's on a great role, though, right? He's on a tremendous role.
If I believe his last loss, I think he's on a 2-3 fight win streak. I know he has wins over. He beat Miles Jury in Phoenix, and then he beat Shaman Moraes in Sacramento on that Durandamy Aspen Ladd card. But I believe his last loss was to Michael Johnson, and that was a very close split decision. So he could very well be on a 4-5 fight win streak. Has that win over the GOAT Artem Lobov, has the split decision win over Dennis Bermudez, and then wins over Moraes and Miles Jury, and then has that. I think that loss to Michael Johnson is sandwiched in there, but he could be on a 4-5 fight win streak. And of course, I don't know if you remember, Max Holloway said Andre Feely was the hardest hitter he ever fought. He said that leading into the Volkanovski fight. So good card. I think I still like the comparisons to a boxing card where you have a really stacked, it's a one fight card. You're paying for one fight. You're not paying for five fights.
I guess so. Like, even though, like, I mean, former world champions there, Holly Holm,
right?
You know, with Anthony Pettis. Like, I feel that feels a bit more important than, you know, boxing cards, as you say. I feel like, but I guess that the fights just aren't as compelling as some of their previous fights, and that's why people aren't really jumping up and down.
Well, like, look at the last few fight cards. Like, UFC 245 had, what, three title fights? UFC 244 two. Like, going back to, I want to say, UFC 240 was the last card that really felt top-heavy, where the main event was Frankie Max and the co-main event was Cyborg and Spencer. And then after that, there were a lot of Canadian fights. And then 241 was obviously stacked. That was the Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis, Romero, Costa, and then the heavyweight championship of the world. Then you had the Abu Dhabi card, and then you had the Melbourne card, and then you had the BMF championship, and then you had the three title fights to end the year. So we had, dating back to August, we've had all these stacked pay-per-view cards. This one might not be as stacked, but the main event is obviously going to be have massive intrigue.
I can't even remember what I had for me lunch. I'm very impressed by you, do you know that?
I could probably name all the pay-per-view cards of the year, but I won't do that. But we're going to
Let's do it. Let's do it.
So there was no pay-per-view in January. That one was canceled. But they had the first ESPN card. That was Cejudo Dillashaw was the ESPN Plus card. That was also Paige VanZant's last card. Greg Hardy fought. Donald Cerrone fought. Alexander Hernandez on that card. February was supposed to be Robert Whittaker and Kelvin. But then Robert Whittaker fell out. So then it was Anderson Silva versus Israel Adesanya. March was the John Jones, Anthony Smith. That also had Cody Garbrandt versus Munoz, Askren versus Lawler. Who's the co-main event with that? Oh, that was Kamaru and Tyron Woodley. That was when Kamaru beat Tyron Woodley. That was March. April was.
All right, got it.
April was 236. That was Israel Adesanya and Kelvin and Holloway versus Poirier. That was the Atlanta card. The one where Sean El Shaddy had to sleep on a couch for like the first day because his hotel was like messed something up, so he didn't have a hotel room. May was Rose Andrade, and then Anderson Cannonier, Aldo Volkanovski, BJ Penn, Clay Guida. I actually didn't watch that card because it was the same day as the Patricio Pitbull, Michael Chandler, MVP, Douglas Lima card in Chicago, so I went to that one. June was 238. That was Cejudo, Marlon, Ferguson, Cerrone, Valentina, Jessica I. Like that card, I think that had the most top 15 ranked fighters of all in one, on one card ever. Joanne Calderwood was on that card against Kyle Chookagian.
Just get to the goddamn events here so we can keep testing on this.
239 was Joan Santos, Nunes Holm, Masvidal, Askren, Rockhold, Jan Blachowicz, Edmund Shabazian was on that card. 240 was Holloway, Edgar, Cyborg, Spencer. 241 was the heavyweight championship of the world, and then Nate Diaz, Pettis, Romero, Costa. 242 was the Habib Poirier card. 243 was the Melbourne card. That was Izzy, Robert Whittaker, Dan Hooker, Iaquinta. 244 was BMF between Masvidal and Nate Diaz. And then Kelvin Till was the co-main event. And then 245 was the three title fights between Usman, Covington, Nunes, Durandamy, and Holloway, Volkanovski.
Jesus Christ. That was pretty impressive. Wow. My God. Imagine if you would have done that to me and it was just me staring at the camera for 10 minutes like this.
Right. It happens. It happens, my friend. It's been like, there's been, I don't know, when was there a January card in 2018? I don't honestly remember because it's been a while.
Are you kidding me? I don't know what happened yesterday. All right. It's gone. All right. It's only right now. That's all I have.
Because UFC 207 was the Ronda Amanda Nunes card. That was in December 2016, 17. I can't remember the year. But then there was no pay-per-view January because they wanted Bisping to headline that in Southern California. And then 208 was the Brooklyn card between Holly Holm and Durandamy and Anderson Silva, Derek Brunson. So like they skipped that January. So they skipped January a lot is what I'm trying to say. Because they usually stack the end of the year and they run out of headliners. Because like that...
Did they not used to always do Boston in January around the football weekend?
Oh, 220. That's right. UFC 220 was DC Ngannou or DC Vulcan and Ngannou Stipe. That was in January. You're right, but that was UFC 220. So then UFC 219 was the Holly Holm Cyborg and then Habib Edson Barbosa card.
Yeah.
That was in December.
I think it was always a good time to do them in January there, of course, because of New England Patriots and stuff, but not so much this year, right?
That doesn't bother me. It'll bother Sean Alshadi. I'm not a
Patriots I wasn't trying to take shots.
Doesn't bother me, man. But anyway, we're going to move right along. We could talk about Pete's terrible memory for the rest of time, but more questions from Seely Axe. First-time commenter, I believe, on the site. If Jorge loses his next fight, will he have to fight Edwards? Well, he doesn't have to do anything. I also think Leon Edwards is already tied to that Tyron Woodley fight. So if they both lose, like if he loses to Woodley and Masvidal loses whoever his next fight is, maybe. But if he loses, well, I don't imagine he's going to fight Edwards next. I bet he fights Colby Covington next if he comes up short, because they would both be coming off losses, or maybe he rematches Nate Diaz. So no, I don't think he has to fight Edwards. Do I want that fight? I like that fight a lot, but I don't think he has to do anything. There's a lot of other fights for him to take.
It's a lot of things that people don't really understand that much about Leon Edwards. There was a lot of hype building up in the UK about a potential fight between him and Till for a while. But as soon as Till lost, he was like, I'm no longer interested. He's lost all his momentum. I'm after rankings. I'm after the belt. I don't care. If you lose, you're out of my crosshairs. You know what I mean? And I think that's a really legitimate and sporting way to look at things. You know, it's not about generating interest for Leon, as you can probably guess. but I think it's about meritocracy for him. If you're winning, if you're the top of the division, he wants to fight you. If you're not, he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, so even as long as he's winning, he's going to stay relevant, which I think I know we're going to talk about it later, but he said he would take the shot against Conor over Usman. I think if you're Masvidal, you see Conor as an easier fight stylistically than fighting Kamaru Usman. Kamaru Usman's bigger, he's a wrestler, he's not going to generate as... It's basically higher risk, lower reward to fight Kamaru Usman. And he said the belt's always going to be there. He doesn't have to fight Usman for the belt, he'll fight whoever. So he wants to fight Conor McGregor, but Conor has to win first. If he loses, I think we're both in agreement the Nate Diaz trilogy fight is logically the one that makes sense if Conor does lose to Donald Cerrone. But I don't expect that to happen. We'll wait for our preview show when we're both in Las Vegas doing this show, which I cannot wait to do. That fight's not even booked between Ty and Woodley, right? Like, that's just all hearsay at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about it on Eurobash early December. We heard that it was either going to be Woodley or Edwards or Hermanson or Till. And I think 2 weeks ago, Mike Bond said it reported as in the works. And then, of course, Leon came out and how dare he abuse Tyron Woodley's ill rap spitting career. Game. You can't do that, my friend. If he's dropping bars like that, you've got to stand off for a second. Like, you know, slag is fighting ability. Slag everything. But don't attack his rap music, or else he may not fight you in London.
Yeah, he spits. That's a big threat. Tyron Woodley has spits venom, and apparently Leon Edwards made fun of it.
Can I ask you just one question about his venomous rap? I'm wondering about, is that a real thing? Him doing that, take his horse to the old, whatever it is, take the Old Town Road. I saw a version of that with Randy Couture singing the chorus and Tyron rapping in between. And Randy's like, I'm going to take my horse to the octagon. And I nearly disappeared. I cringed so much. Like,
was
I mean,
that
I
was, for the World MMA Awards? Because I know they do skits.
Oh, thank
I think. So. I don't remember because I know Ben Askren did a Baby Shark parody. And they ended up talking crap about Dylan Danis. I don't honestly know. But that sounds terrible from everything.
Someone just sent me the other day and I was like, I don't. Maybe it was Leon, actually. Maybe Leon posted it. And that's what the rap that he chose to diss. But I always say that the only one of those skits that was ever worth its weight in gold was Cormier and his love of chicken. Yeah, that was my favorite.
I think it was cake.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, sorry. What was the rap?
I don't remember. Oh. I don't know. Sorry, well, can you sing Old Town Road for all of our listeners? Can you sing
I don't
Old
know
Town
the
Road?
Words.
You're
though.
Lying. You're lyrics, obviously lying.
I got the... I remember that Randy was doing it, like it was a fight themed one though. It wasn't the lyrics of the song.
Everybody watching or listening to this after the fact, can you tweet at Pizza Carroll that he's a liar and clearly knows the words to Old Town Road by Lil Nas X?
I don't
X
even know who's
top of said.
What's his name? Who?
Lil Nas X.
I thought it was a Tyron Woodley song, to be honest.
You thought Tyron Woodley wrote Old Town Road.
No, I didn't know your man's name though. Like, best luck to
my man's name. That's funny. Lil Nas X is a cool cat though. He seems like a fun guy to hang out with. Anyway, moving
right
along.
I know nothing about the man.
From Lodovic, what's up with you? Long time commenter, legend, the legendary Lodovic, and Matt the Donk threw a question in too. What's up with UFC titles? Middleweight. Izzy wanted to be an active champion, fight 3 or 4 times a year, yet we're 3 months away from his last fight, and he has nothing announced. What's going on there? Welterweight.
Jesus.
Well, we're going to go down. So, middleweight. What's up with Izzy not fighting right now, Pizza Carroll? Last I heard, he wanted to fight Romero in March. I assume he's holding out for more money, but I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, the guy is, like, really active. I just feel like it's a bit harsh to be like, what are you doing, mate? Hurry up and fight. He wouldn't be the one I'd say that about, but...
Who's rushing to fight Romero? Like, the fact that he's calling out Romero should be enough for fans to get hyped.
Yeah, man. Like, that's an awful fight for him. Like, that's the one fight, if you could pick a single person in the division and go, do you know what I think is going to be tricky? That's the one fight. So, you know, fair play to him for even entertaining it. Like, he could easily say, look, Romero's coming off a loss. I have no interest in that. So whenever that fight happens, I'm ready to watch it. And I'm pretty sure that Adesanya isn't going to get to the stage where he hasn't competed in a year or something like that. I just don't expect that to happen with him.
Yeah, if he'll fight before the summer, and then he'll probably fight 2-3 more times after that, depending on physically how he comes out. Because, like, again, Jorge Masvidal said it perfectly. You fight Yoel Romero, you're physically never the same again. So I know Izzy wants to be an active champion, but let's see how he physically is after fighting Romero first. Welterweight, is Masvidal next, or are we waiting for Woodley versus Edwards to play out?
I think if you're Usman, you want Masvidal to be next, right?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
But as we've said for the last 3-4 weeks, everything is hinged on January 18th. If Conor wins, Masvidal might want that fight first. Like, if Conor wins again, like, we need to remember how much clout this guy has if he's in a good position. I mean, more powerful than any fighter probably in the history of the organization 100%. In terms of what he can make them do, what he can architect for himself. So, you know, I feel like the welterweight title picture will probably move on. We'll know what's going on after January 18th. But yeah, I think if Conor loses, Masvidal fights Usman. If Conor wins, there's going to be a lot of talk of Conor and Masvidal. I don't know if it will happen. And maybe if Conor wins, Usman will fight Edwards if he gets through Tyron Woodley. But I do think that's the fight to make, right? Leon Edwards versus Tyron Woodley. Like, that seems to be a perfect fight. Amidst all the confusion, that's a good fight to make.
I agree. And then we always have Colby Covington returning at some point. I know his jaw is wired shut, so he probably won't be fighting until late 2020 if he fights at all this year. So there's a lot
When he returns, he's going to have a huge impact. It's going to really shake things up. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Just depending on when he re-enters that situation, regardless of the loss, he's going to really shake things up.
And then for all we know, Nick Diaz is going to return, and then we have another wrench thrown into the cog. Bantamweight, do you think they actually give Aldo the next shot?
I hope not.
I agree.
I love Jose Aldo. I think he's a genius. The greatest featherweight ever, you know? I thought he was brilliant against Marlon. I can't say enough good things about the guy, but it just doesn't make sense to do things like this, you know?
Yeah, and I know, I believe it's Damon has a piece coming out with Marlon Moraes where Marlon kind of talks about it. Jose Aldo calling out Henry Cejudo and Henry Cejudo wanting to fight Jose Aldo. So it's a weird situation for the Peter Yans and the Aljamain Sterlings and the Marlon Moraeses. Even Corey Sandhagen will probably have a fight early spring, late winter. It would be disappointing if Jose. I mean, I like that fight as a martial arts competition. Like, I like Aldo versus.
Oh, yeah. Israel. Oh, stop. Yeah.
I love that fight, but I don't want it to happen. I want Jose Aldo to fight Uriah Faber, rematch at Bantamweight. Or I know our cameraman extraordinaire, Casey Lydon, will want who he calls the most intimidating. Have you heard this? The most intimidating fighter on the UFC roster, Ryan Hall. That is what Casey Lydon calls Ryan Hall, because I'll let him explain it to you. But he wants Ryan Hall to fight Jose Aldo next, which I like that fight too. Probably won't happen.
He called him out right with Damon. Damon did the interview with Ryan. Yeah,
Ryan Hall took to Instagram and called out Frankie Edgar and Jose Aldo. I like both of those fights. Neither of those fights are probably going to happen because Ryan Hall is, as Casey Lydon says again, the most intimidating fighter on the UFC roster.
Well, you know, I don't want to disagree with Casey because he already beats me regularly and I have to see him next week. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been conditioning my body by getting my friends to attack me with sticks, but I'm still not comfortable to disagree with him. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, there's a difference between sticks and Casey's fists, though. Casey's fists are much harder.
he uses weapons as well.
Yeah, they're called his shins. Light heavyweight. What's next for John Jones after his inevitable win over Dominic Reyes? That's a little disrespectful, but okay.
I feel like the division has to do something if they want them to stick around there. Like, the light heavyweight needs to, they need to make something happen, really. I know it's a bad thing to say, but what, I can't see a reason why he wouldn't go to heavyweight after this next one. And I kind of expect it to happen, because you can only say something so many times before people actually just go, you know what, just stay where you are, mate. Like, you know, and I feel like it's been flirted with for way too long. And I just feel like at this stage, there's no one that you're going like, oh, he's going to have real trouble with this guy. Maybe a lot of people were, maybe more casual fans were getting excited about Johnny Walker and stuff on his ascent. Yeah. But look what Corey Anderson did to him. Like, I think if Anderson beats Jan, like, if people actually listen to Anderson, they would be compelled to that fight, because I am. I think it's a very good fight. But I just feel as though Corey, you know, I feel like if he's going to do it and kind of obscure anyone else's title shot, it would probably be Corey on the wrong end of that and John going to heavyweight, you know, unfortunately.
I think if Corey beats Jan, similar to how he beats Johnny Walker, I think we could get that fight between Corey Anderson and John Jones, especially because
that's
Corey,
a tough ask.
Corey Anderson's been talking a lot of greasiness at John Jones. He showed up at that autograph signing in New York, so the seeds have been planted. He had a great scrum backstage after UFC 244 in New York.
Brilliant.
After he finished Johnny Walker, he was getting very emotional. So I think if Corey Anderson wins and says the right things and generates enough buzz, because like you and I said, after that Johnny Walker fight, Corey Anderson was the one we both wanted to fight John Jones. And Casey said the same thing on Coffee Talk. Like, Corey Anderson is the one people are talking about. Like, Dominic Reyes might be a more exciting fighter, but people are talking about Corey Anderson, how he just barreled over Johnny Walker. When Casey, Esther, and I went to the Dominance MMA Media Day, Corey Anderson had the best interview of that
day. It was brilliant.
Like, we interviewed Kelvin, Kamaru, Marlon, Justin Gaethje, Cody Garbrandt, Ali. Like, Corey Anderson had the best interview that day. And I remember after that interview, Casey was like, wow, I am sold on that Johnny Walker fight now. So if Corey Anderson wins, I like that fight. And then I think if John Jones... I would obviously favor John Jones against Dominic and Corey Anderson. John Jones beats those two. There's no one left in the division that I can think of outside of Johnny Walker string together a few more wins, then go up to heavyweight. Fight Rumble Johnson at heavyweight. You guys never got that at light heavyweight. Might as well fight at heavyweight, right?
Yeah, I agree with it all. Like, I mean, Johnny's unfortunately has been knocked down considerably. Yeah. He has a big client ahead of him to get back to the top of that mountain, so there's no point in me saying, yeah, John, stick around here for four fights, you know. Like, I'd love to see the Corey fight. I'd be disappointed if he didn't fight Corey. I think Corey's story is tremendous. From where he's come to where he is now is unbelievable. So I'd love to see that fight, but I think John is going to heavyweight maybe in the next year.
Well, thanks for the question, Lodovic. He said, thanks.
Legend.
He said, thank you. Long live the scissors.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. I was just reading something about embargoes and what have you there.
Oh,
so
my.
I got lost a little bit.
Oh, my. All right. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. Connor above featherweight. If Connor loses to Cowboy, and then this is from a longtime commenter, Trumbo. If Connor loses to Cowboy, then despite winning the lightweight belt, his record after leaving featherweight will be 2-3. He had a large size and reach advantage at featherweight, and his power translated there, but they're much heavier, allowing him to finish fights early. His conditioning and cardio issues played no role at featherweight in his run there. My question is, if Connor finishes his career as a less than 500 fighter above featherweight, would it be fair to say that featherweight was the division where he was an elite fighter? And above featherweight, he's an extremely talented fighter, but not an all-time great. If he loses to Cowboy and then loses to Nate in the trilogy and retires, what does his legacy look like? Undefeated at featherweight, 1-1 at lightweight, and 1-3 at welterweight. Very interesting question, Trumbo. We talk a lot about Connor being this great fighter and so on and so forth. I don't know anyone calling him the greatest lightweight of all time. He's obviously 1-1 at welterweight right now, if I'm not mistaken. So if he loses to Nate again and he loses to Cowboy, he'd be 1-3 welterweight, and he's 1-1 at lightweight, losing to Khabib, who's undefeated, and then throwing a perfect game against Eddie Alvarez. So for as much as we hate seeing Connor on the scale at featherweight, as Trumbo presents it, is featherweight the right division for him, considering that's where he clearly had the most success in his career?
Here's the thing. We thought Conor was done with featherweight before he signed with the UFC.
Really?
He fought Ivan Butchinger, and that was a short notice thing. He was meant to defend his Cage Warriors featherweight title. Jim Ehlers pulled out, who he was meant to defend it against, and they made the vacant 55 title against Butchinger. Now, when he fought Butchinger, he looked unbelievable. If you haven't watched that fight, it's that beautiful left hook that he knocks him out with dead. And Butchinger is a serious, serious piece of work. And after that, Conor, as far as I knew, was hoping to stay at 155. And I can remember I interviewed him. So that fight was on New Year's Eve or around then. And in February, it still hadn't been announced that he'd be making his debut in April. And when I was talking, saying like, you know, he didn't know it was going to happen because, you know, there was a few things and blah, blah, blah. Those few things turned out to be the UFC wanted to sign him as a featherweight and he wanted to be a lightweight.
Interesting.
So, yes. So he came into the UFC as a featherweight, obviously obliterates Marcus Brimage. And then the UFC are like, okay, we need this guy to stay a featherweight. You know what I mean? Because they could see that he was stimulating all this kinds of interest. But I will say that Conor's best cut to featherweight is one of the ones that's most disputed. One of the ones that people are like, oh, look at the stadium. It was against Aldo.
Yeah.
And, well, I think actually Seaver in Boston was a pretty bad one. But the one against Aldo, he had brought in Lockhart.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that SBG or any of their fighters had got an elite nutritionist in. And he made that with so much ease. I think he could have stayed at featherweight for even longer, but I think at that stage he was, you know, he had won that belt. He wanted to go on to new pastures, get some new silverware. But it's amazing that, look, based on the numbers you're giving us there, look, he absolutely like one of the greats at featherweight. But if he had his way, it wouldn't have happened at all. Maybe, you know, that's interesting.
I think, would you put Conor third as greatest featherweight after Aldo and Holloway?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess his greatest contribution to the featherweight division was the knockouts, making it hot, and really putting a spotlight in that division, because until him, I can never remember that many casual supporters being interested in that division. I think he really allowed these lighter weight divisions to be to really thrive and stimulated them across the board. Because even like the 35 champion is talking about Conor, the 55 champion, everything around it, even though 55 has always been a great division, I think he's one of the greats. Look, like he hasn't had the best run in the last year. He's had bad things go on outside the octagon. But Conor McGregor's a name that we're never going to forget. In this sport, he'll be so synonymous with this sport until the end of time, as far as I'm concerned. He's probably gone out as one of the great fighters in MMA history, you know what I mean? Without a doubt, even though he is the third best featherweight.
Well, I think I think when you break down greatest fighter, you really have to break it down between like greatest fighter in terms of actual
ability
and then prize fighter. There's not been a better prize fighter than Conor McGregor. No. Like, and win or lose, you want to watch that man fight. In terms of actual fighting ability inside the octagon, I wouldn't put him as the greatest featherweight, lightweight, welterweight, or whatever. I maybe top 10 talented, but in terms of prize fighting, he's probably number one. I can't think of anyone like Ronda's up there, Brock Lesnar, Chael Sonnen. Like, these aren't the greatest, most talented, but you pay a lot of money. At the end of the day, you pay money to watch these guys fight. Even Ben Askren was a great prize fighter. Like, he might not have been the most talented, but you wanted to see him fight.
Amazing. Yeah. But I do feel as though, because he hasn't got that win since 2016, that initial run is overlooked to some degree. You know, it hasn't been the greatest run for Conor. Look, we don't know where he's at really until we're going to see him against Cerrone, but that initial run in the UFC was unbelievable. Like, I mean, it was the sporting moment of a whole generation in this country. You know what I mean? It was insane.
I mean, it captured America by storm. I mean, I remember during the NFL playoffs that were on Fox, like they were showing Conor McGregor commercials of him hyping his fight against Dennis Seaver. And like, I'm watching these previews, and on there, like, they're building up Dennis Seaver to be like this world-class world beater that could steamroll over Conor. And I'm Dennis Seaver is a great fighter. He's very talented. His kicks are great, as my voice cracks. I didn't think he was going to be Conor McGregor, and all of a sudden, all of my friends who are tuning in to watch the Patriots are like, can Conor beat Dennis Siver? I'm like, yes, he can absolutely beat Dennis Siver. Are you kidding me right now? Like, to go from, like, who did he beat? Dustin Poirier, and then he fought Dennis Siver. Like, I thought Dustin Poirier was a harder fight, like, would have been a harder fight than Dennis Siver. And people were, like, building up Dennis Siver to be this force of nature. And then all of a sudden, he does that to Jose Aldo. I'm like, I got nothing to say. That, like, Conor in that stretch of time was something to behold.
I had to stop, like, going for, like, a pint in my local pub because I'd just be inundated. Like, there'd be, like, a circle around you. What's going on? What's he doing? It's just, like, I can't fucking do this anymore. You know
what
I mean?
That's why
I
don't watch, like, the last time I watched a mixed martial arts event in a bar was Ronda versus Betch Kohea.
But we don't get to do it because that's 6 a.m., you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just me going to the pub, like, 6 months out from a Conor fight, and it's that crazy. Like, it was insane. It was insane. Like, honestly, it was insane. Like, never happened again.
Well, like, when Ronda fought, obviously the world stopped to watch her fights. But, like, I remember going to a bar for the Ronda Betch Kohea fight. People were like, do you think Ronda can beat Betch Kohea? I'm like, I think so, guys. And then people were like, when is Kimbo Slice fighting? I'm like, that dude died, man. Like,
Jesus.
Come on. Like, when's Brock Lesnar fighting? I'm like, he's not even in the UFC anymore. Like, those are the type of fans that would come out for Ronda Rousey fights over here. Like, they would just want to, like, people would be like, stand him up. Like, why is, like, or the best was that card, both of the Nogueira brothers fought. Like, Big Nog fought Stefan Struve, and I think Little Nog fought Shogun on that card at UFC 190. And then someone was like, this guy just fought earlier on the card because they're twins. So they thought Nogueira fought twice in one night. And I was like, they have different tattoos, guy. Like, what are you talking about? Like, anyway, I could talk about nonsensical American MMA fans all day. But we're gonna hop over to Twitter. Sean Denny from Denny Rants. Hashtag the A-side on Twitter if you want to see your question. What are the high points and low points of MMA media room food? How do they fuel the media? So, Pizzi, I don't know how they do it in Europe. What's the food scene over there?
They always make sure they have 17 different types of potatoes for me because they know I'll just leave. If they don't have boiled, mashed, roast, gratin, everything. I want to see every single potato you can make in that country. And that's pretty much as far as I go, Sean. You know what I mean? After the spuds, nothing else for me to do, really. And if the spuds aren't up to scratch, just leave immediately. That's why I've always done it.
Yep.
But thank God that MMA fighting understand.
Pizza Carol loves his potatoes, everyone. T-Mobile Arena used to give us food vouchers. That was kind of annoying. So we'd have to go to, like, the actual concession stands with, like, a $15 thing.
I can remember Ariel Helwani being sent
I went out there with him. It's a nightmare.
The dude's on the broadcast.
Yeah.
And he's, like, inundated trying to eat a burger or something. You're like, this is crazy, man.
I remember time I went and he's like, Jose, can you go get me my food? I don't want to be this guy. He's like, I can't go to the concourse without being mobbed by fans. I was like, yeah, I got you. But now at the T-Mobile Arena, they not only do they have food, they have, like, two different courses. It's kind of nice. I don't know if you were at UFC. Were you at UFC 194, the Aldo McGregor card?
Yes, yeah.
Do you remember they had the three cards in 3 days?
Yeah, and first, the Cosmo. Remember the Cosmo?
That's what I was about to say. The first night of the Cosmo, someone messed up the catering. So they
was
got
that what
like.
It was?
Yeah. So they got like prime rib and lobster bisque and like flatbread pizzas and like a carving station. I remember Dana White coming in and be like, what is this? Why are we spending so much on the media? And then the next day, I think that was the Paige VanZant Rose card. Oh, no, that might have been Frank Edgar, Chad Mendes. I get the days confused because those happened back to back. And then the next day, it was like deli sandwiches.
It's very funny you say this because if you can imagine, that fight was huge. That was Conor at the height of his power. Mm-hmm. And we had loads of really famous, like well-known writers from Ireland coming over to foil for the papers. And they, of course, weren't interested in Frankie and Mendez at the Cosmo. They didn't give a crap. But I walked in and I saw the food and I sent a picture to them. And next of all, there was 15 Irish media guys outside.
Well, at UFC, at the Israel Adesanya Brad Tavares card, that was at the Palms. That was the Ultimate Fighter finale. They would give like boxes of food. Oh, so nice. Like you'd go in, there would be stacks of boxes of like sandwiches. And then all of a sudden, like there were some media people, like you said, newspaper guys that didn't care about the tough finale. They just cared about the DC Stipe Miocic fight, the next one. And all of a sudden, they bring out a sushi cart. And I'm WhatsApping a bunch of photos to like the Canadian and like Hispanic media, and they're like, "I'll be right there." And then they're just there. They don't even cover the fight. They're just there for the food.
Vegas is expensive, man.
Vegas is expensive. All right, moving on from MMA Duration at MMA Duration. Do you think Masvidal and Covington will fight this year? I say no.
I say no as well, because Usman and McGregor are there at play. If McGregor loses against Cerrone, which I don't think is going to happen, I think it's better chance of it happening then, right? Because then you can go. I think if Masvidal fought Usman and he beats Usman, the UFC would have no problems in making Masvidal v. Colby because of the traction it would probably produce, I think. Especially if they do make Israel versus Yoel, and then they'll have a precedent and they can off they go. And next of all, Cejudo will be matched with Aldo and everything else will be happening like that.
Well, also, who knows when Covington's going to fight again? I mean, his jaw is wired shut right now.
Oh, so shit, yeah. Okay,
He might fight once in 2020, so who knows who will fight. But no, I don't think that fight's happened. From Gerardo at JC Dulos 1. Interesting question here, Pete C. Would you rather take one clean punch from Ngannou for $5 million or one clean head kick from Edson Barboza for $1 million?
I'd take the dig.
I would, because he doesn't say where Ngannou's punching me. Is he punching me in the head? Or is he punching me in, like, the leg?
Wherever, like, oh, I'll eat it.
Well, if Ngannou punches me in the head, I'm going to die. So if it's grand. Like, if I'm taking a punch from Ngannou or a head kick from Barboza, I'd probably take a head kick from Barboza because I'll probably go to bed, but Ngannou will, like, kill me.
I'm just eating the Ngannou dig. I'm just taking it.
But if Ngannou, like, punches me in the ribs, I might break a lung or puncture me.
Break a lung.
Like, Ngannou might stop my heart if he punches me in the chest. But if he punches me in the leg, whatever. Punch me in the leg.
Just give me a dead leg, yeah.
Ah! Yeah. But, like, Ngannou punching me in the chest could kill me.
Yeah, that's true. But I just want to be able to say I did it. I want to, no, that's I don't, true. Actually. Because then everyone's going to be like, Francis punch Pete next time you see him. But Barbosa is terrifying. Like, I feel like... Like, that's going to be... Just imagine looking at them going, like, right, go. And they're, like, bouncing on the spot. They're like, oh, no. You know, you speak logic. I think it is the Barboza. Just, like, for the future generations of the Carrolls, I think that's probably the best way to go.
From John Baltz, long-time listener. He always tweets about us and retweets us. Clearly, Pizza Carroll knows the words to Old Town Road and wisely didn't sing them because he didn't want Lil Nas X's publishers coming after MMA Fighting's YouTube channel. So, exactly. Yes.
Thank you.
That's fair. Alex K. Lee.
Google words there.
Alex K. Lee tweets, check out Jose Young's rattling off dates and details of events off the top of his head. Hashtag the A-side. Man, those crystals must really work. JK, crystals are stupid. You're stupid, Alex. And now,
that's
then,
too far now, Alex. That's personal. That's getting personal with us now. You can't
and in the, bring
into it, man.
In the reply, though, Mike Bond of MMA Junkie writes, child's play, still waiting for details on the trivia challenge. Mike Bond, you don't want that, man. I talked to Ariel once because Ariel does like the trivia game show between fighters. I'm like, we should have MMA Fighting MMA Junkie because I think me and Bond would go after each other. Yeah, you would be useless. You would be very useless, but I think I could carry the load, and I think me and Bond would go after. I've been calling out Bond for a trivia challenge for a long time. So
Casey would be good at that as well, actually. Casey and Esther would be good at that.
Casey would be good. Someone asked us if both sites got in a fight, like a battle royale, who would win?
Just like literally put me in there with the MMA Junkie lads and just carve them all up.
I said that, but I also said Casey would probably also help. Casey would probably use you as a weapon.
He could use me.
Pick you up.
Listen, Casey can use me to do whatever he wants.
Ew. Ew. Niall McGrath says, Petey stole my microphone.
It's a true story, actually, yeah. But I gave him a career, so what? I think it's a fair trade.
Oh, Damon Martin also throws his name in the hat on our site. Goes, I will crush it, MMA trivia. So yeah, I think me and Damon. Damon would dominate that.
Just leave me outside that.
Joseph Corbally? Corbally?
Corbally. Corbally. Yeah.
He responds to Niall. Yeah, but you could just steal a lane. To be fair, I'm sure he'll give it back.
Yeah, I'm actually afraid to let Elaine be around Niall, such as his sexual prowess.
Ew.
And just he exudes a sexual energy that, you know what I mean, I don't think she'd be able to control herself. So I've been keeping her away from him for a long time, and he's dead right, Joseph.
That's,
I 100% agree with you.
I mean,
like, have you ever been around Niall McGrath? He's one of the sexiest men in the world. Like,
I mean, he's up there, but I think anyone standing next to you is one of the sexiest men. I'm just being honest.
Well played.
Is this, who is this? Okay, from another question, Joseph. How do you pronounce his last name? Corbally?
No, don't. You see, that's the mistake you always make when you overpronounce things. It's Corbally.
Corbally.
Moving on.
Well, I want to be polite because I don't like when people call me.
Hey, Corbally. What's your question, sir?
Jeez, Louise. Well, with Arnold Allen losing his opponent, will he get his rightful spot on the London card? And if so, who should his opponent be?
Rebook it. Just do Emmett v. Arnold Allen in London.
I agree.
I've been saying that since the word go. I mean, if Emmett's able to turn around in 8 weeks, that's a perfect fight for London.
Someone named Stuart Tuckwell asked pretty much the exact same question. He said, I would like to see Arnold Allen versus Shane Burgos in London.
That would be a brilliant fight. That's a great fight, and especially with Arnold Allen had fought Amir Khani to a split decision a couple of years ago, and then Burgos destroyed Amir Khani really in his last outing there at MSG. So I think that's a good fight, yeah, definitely. And Burgos is a great fight to watch as well. That's a very tricky puzzle for Allen to solve.
Allen versus Calvin Kattar would also be a really good fight, but Calvin Kattar's coming off a loss. From Andy Stevenson, would Conor McGregor benefit from switching to a different Irish gym?
I couldn't do that.
No way. Someone replies, imagine the absolute mayhem that would cause.
Oh, there'd be people screaming in the streets for weeks. If he was ever going to go... The thing about Ireland is, when people started suggesting this, like, he needs to get out of Ireland, it was when he was bigger than, like, you know, he's bigger than Jesus here. Like, I mean, they lose their fucking minds. Like, I've been around him when he's walking around Dublin. It's crazy, man. I feel like when you're that much of a celebrity in your hometown, there's a million reasons why you shouldn't go training, right? You can do absolutely anything you want. You have the keys to the city. So I think if he was ever going to leave, it would be to leave Ireland, you know?
I agree. But I don't think that's ever going to happen anytime soon. I mean, he brought John Kavanaugh and Artem were in his corner to fight Floyd. Like, John Kavanaugh is like a jiu-jitsu coach, and Artem is a 500 MMA fighter. And they were in his corner to fight the greatest boxer of our generation. Like, Owen Roddy, I get. Owen Roddy is a phenomenal boxing coach. But, like, I did not understand why John and Artem were in that corner. But Connor's loyal. So, it didn't surprise me. It confused me.
They all just wanted those sweet waistcoats, I'd say.
That was a nice outfit. Another question from Stuart Tuckwell. How many current Cage Warriors fighters does Peachy think will be in the UFC by the end of the year?
I think Modestus Bukauskas has a good chance of getting signed because he's from London ahead of that London card. I think Joy Herbert, who was the featured fighter on our prospects list this year, he's a teammate of Leon Edwards. I think that will be his perfect entry. If Leon Edwards headlines London, get Joy underneath him to put a bit of a shine on him. I'm also really excited about Jack Cartwright, who won the bantamweight title on that tournament. In one night, he knocked out Marko Kovacevic and Scott Malone, two former title contenders, to win the belt. I'm really, because I don't know a lot about him, I'm intrigued to see him. And with a record like that, he could see himself signed. And I also think that Ross Houston is on the verge of signing for someone. Ross Houston, I believe, is on the verge of signing for a lot of people are interested in him. I'm hearing Bellator, ONE Championship, UFC, everybody interested in him. So that's what I hear anyway. So I'd say four, maybe between two and four, and hoping for four, obviously, for the fighter's sake.
Yeah, I mean, I believe you, but. But Bellator is doing a lot of big things in Europe. Could a lot of those guys sign with Bellator too? Like, does it have to be the UFC, or does Cage Warriors not have a good relationship with Bellator right now?
No, there's a bit of a jousting session going on there, but generally Cage Warriors, once you have the Cage Warriors belt, the UFC are going to sign you. Like, it's only a matter of time. I think 100 fighters have gone from Cage Warriors to UFC. I doubt there's any other promotion in the world with that that kind of record. It's 94 or something.
LFA probably is way up there.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. But what happened recently was that Soren Back sign for Bellator over the UFC. That was the situation that we were told. Both of the promotions wanted him. Back ended up going with Bellator. He won in his debut against Terry Brazier, a former Bama champion. So usually it was always Cage Warriors to UFC. I guess Back has broken that mold. Maybe Houston will go on and do something similar, but most of the time it goes Cage Warriors to UFC.
Someone in the YouTube comment section complimented your Adidas outfit, by the way.
Oh, thanks. I'm only wearing the top, though. I have a full tracksuit, but I've got jeans on today, unfortunately.
His exact phrase was, dude on the right is rocking a Jonathan Davis Adidas outfit. I don't know what that means.
I don't know who Jonathan Davis is, but he's obviously very handsome and stylish.
Yeah, I assume he's just drunk or, you know.
Ugly.
All right, let's see. More questions, because a lot of the questions are just about Connor, which we've talked about a lot. Thoughts on Canadian fighter Jordan Young Gun Mean signing with Bellator, 31-12. So Jordan Mean, I believe, debuted around the same time as Rory McDonald, but he fought at an insane rate. So he has far more total fights than Rory McDonald, but they debuted around the same time. I think he debuted when he was still a teenager. He might have been like 19, maybe 20. So, yeah, what do you think about Jordan Mean signing with the Bellator after his UFC run?
Well, I think he's a very exciting fighter, first of all. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's always in great striking matches. He has great knees, great elbows. Like, I mean, he's just a vicious kind of guy to watch, Jordan Mean. So, mm-hmm. I think it's a great signing. I think they could stimulate a lot of interest in their younger fighters by pitting them against a guy like Jordan Mean. And if Jordan Mean ends up overwhelming those guys, he'll be right in the mix there in the division when it comes to the title talk. And look, he has name value straight off the bat. Yeah. The fact that we're talking about him, the fact that fans are asking about him, it's a big deal.
Looking at his record, he's also a former Strikeforce champion. He made his debut, not champion, Strikeforce fighter, made his debut in 2006. So in the last 15 years, he's fought more than 40 times. His losses are he lost to Jason High back in 2010. He lost to Mike Ricci in 2009. Then Tyron Woodley, Matt Brown, Thiago Alves, Emil Weber Meek, and Bilal Muhammad. So he's not losing to bums. He does have wins over Mike Pyle, Dan Miller, Eric Silva, Alex Moreno. So Cyborg Santos, Evangelista Santos back in the Strikeforce time. So went Josh Berkman, Joe Riggs. So he's been around the block. He's been around the block. And I'm just looking at his like early records. He fought his UFC debut was against Rory, or not UFC, his MMA debut was against Rory McDonald, June 2006. He then fought in August, September, October twice, and December. So in 2006, he fought 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he fought six times in 2006. Jeez. Not only did he fight six times in 2006, he fought six times between June and December.
All you need is an 8-week camp, don't see the big deal.
And then in 2007, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, he fought seven times in 2007. So in 2 years, he fought like 13 times.
He's like Travis Fulton. He was out for his record there honestly, at the start of his career, wasn't
honestly.
He?
And that's like Travis Fulton wasn't even cutting weight. Like Jordan Mean was cutting down to welterweight or middleweight or whatever it was. Yeah. So dude is a monster. And I don't know if it caught up to him, but I remember his knockout of Mike Pyle. What card was that? Oh man, I can't remember what card that was. I want to say it was one of those. It was either the Tulsa or the Albuquerque card. I know Benson Henderson headlined it, but I can't remember if it was against Rustam Khabilov or RDA. And then his loss against Matt Brown, I know, was on the Strikeforce. I mean, Strikeforce. It was basically still the Strikeforce card, the San Jose card. Benson Henderson versus Gilbert Melendez up in San Jose. I think that had like 11 finishes and 12 fights, something crazy like that. That was an unbelievable card too. I know, of course, but I didn't have to tell you that. You already knew that off the top of your head.
No, I know Jordan Mean, but Jesus Christ, I don't know his ontology that well. I'll tell you that much. My God, what blood type is he on?
Couldn't tell you, man. I don't know what type of blood type anyone is. I can tell you when they fought, but I can't tell you their medical history. Moving on. Let's see. Interesting question from Hefe01 on the site. Is Tony Ferguson a lightweight George St. Pierre? Their styles and skill sets are very similar. Stick with me here. Both have top tier wrestling.
I was gone already, so he needed to say that.
Both have top tier wrestling. Both work effectively behind the jab. Both have extremely high fight IQ. Both have impeccable ground and pound. Both have solid jiu-jitsu. The only difference I see is they apply their skills in a different manner. Tony likes to strike more and counter wrestle, while GSP would rather wrestle first. I know all mixed martial artists are well-rounded, but but am I wrong with my assessment of their skills? I don't think anyone is like George St. Pierre, and I don't think I've seen a fighter quite like Tony Ferguson. Not to say they have similar skills. They could. I'm sure Tony Ferguson could fight like George St. Pierre if he wanted, but those two are so unique in their skill set that, no, I wouldn't compare those, but I wouldn't compare anyone to those two.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say when I heard the question first. Just Tony Ferguson, like anyone, is just no. He's complete unique. But, like, the points you've made, you're right. Like, I mean, if you isolate those things, he's right that he does those things as well. But I don't see them being similar, to be honest, at all, as fighters. I don't. I think they're shockingly different, actually.
they're extraordinarily different. Alex K. Lee to Mike Bond says, you don't want none of Jose Rain Man Youngs or Damon A Beautiful Mind Martin. That's a little rude.
Just because everyone's afraid of Alex because he carries guns and he's a steroid abuser, they crush your skull if he met you in person. So I mean, that's why he's able to talk like that, because everyone's gonna be like, all right, Alex, don't send your goons around here to step in my face again. So hope you're doing well, Alex. Please don't hurt me or my family. Thank you.
Damon says, we would crush junkie guys in an actual fight. I would pick up Mike Bond and use him to beat up the rest of the staff.
Yeah, I'll just kind of sit on a throne in the background as a final boss in case anything needs to be popped off.
Damon also, I think, wants to clarify the Jonathan Davis comment saying he's the lead singer of Korn.
Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah. Baka 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 bow. That song. I know that one. That's it. So I take my face and bash it into a mirror. Image.
I am at a loss for words. What happened? What just happened right now?
Just give it. You see, I know the words of that. You know what I mean? But that's the only. Bit of that song I know.
So, let's recap the last few months. What did you saw? You sang Dido a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing Korn.
Yeah. Didn't have what's his little name? The guy with the rap? That's not Tyron Woodley.
Lil Nas X.
Yeah, I don't know his tunes, but next week. Next week.
Can you sing what's the UFC's theme song?
No, I don't know. Like I get excited when I hear it, but I don't know what that man is saying.
You get and excited always, when you hear that song, Face the Pain?
Yeah, like he's talking about finger painting. That's all I know. Finger paint, do something like this. Finger paint. That song, yeah, that's all I know.
I believe he's saying Face the Pain.
He's saying finger paint.
Oh, okay.
Everybody knows that.
At the Quintet grappling match, they did like the UFC versus Strikeforce and everything. They had the teams walk out to music, and that's the song Team UFC walked out to.
That's magic, man. Finger paint is a great song.
Finger paint is a great song. So, recap. PT is a big fan of Korn. He can sing everything verbatim, and he's a big fan of the UFC's theme song, Finger Paint. But we're running out of time.
I don't have any Korn albums. So if you could tell me which one to get, I'll get one.
Don't lie.
I'll download it right now. Just tell me which one to get.
All
right,
everyone on Twitter, just tweet Korn things at Pete C. Carroll.
Let me just see which ones that we have here. Korn with a K, not with a C.
Korn with a backwards K.
Doesn't do that on Spotify.
Oh,
just
okay.
Straight up normal K. Right, so should I download Follow the Leader, The Nothing, which sounds very positive. See You on the Other Side. Jesus Christ. Now, I don't think these lads are very positive, actually, after reading the titles of some of these songs. MTV Unplugged, that's the one I'm getting, lads.
Yep.
Lovely.
Yep. But anyway, we're running up on time. So per usual, PT, any promo you want to cut or any other songs you want to sing?
No, I forgot about the promo again. Shit. Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, this is not a promo. This is just me telling you. What the hell is going on at the start of Akira comic book? I have literally read the same 25 pages over and over again going, what in the name of Jesus is going on here? And then it gets to a part where it says there are no people allowed come into level 5 or something. I'm like, I don't know how we got here, and I don't know what the hell's going on. Like, am I not looking at the pictures enough? Like, I can't follow the plot. Is it because I'm old and I have no imagination? This is what me and Elaine decided last night. We're like, if you were reading this when you were younger, your imagination would be a lot more active, and you're drawing conclusions from the images and then adding to the dialogue. Whereas I'm just kind of going, I don't know what's going on there, reading the dialogue and then moving on, and I don't have a clue.
So your promo is being confused about Akira?
Yeah. Akira, as we call her in Dublin.
Uh-huh. I think everyone in the world calls it Akira outside of people actually in Japan. But bring it over to Las Vegas and I will give you a crash course on how to read comic books, or the people on my Twitter can just go after you. People always try to set up a fight between me and Robbie over at Barstool because he's a big comic book nerd too. And people are always like, oh, you should fight Robbie. You guys are both
I've seen
people. I'm just like, all right, guys, come on now.
I've seen you guys trying to be really nice to each other as everyone else is like, bah!
Yeah, they're trying to pick a fight between us. But, bring it on over. I'll give you a crash course on how to read comic books.
That's going to be a great video for MMA Fighting's YouTube. Petey learning how
to
read.
It's going to be A-Side Live, how to read comic books with Jose Youngs, as Petey just goes, do I go right to left?
It's confusing, right?
Like, no,
I mean, the start
it's really not.
It isn't. Oh, I don't have a clue what's going
on. I bet
on.
You started off with the wrong book.
I have one. It says one.
All right.
And it starts off him going, are you number 43 or something? And he's like, yeah, 20, bring it
I
on.
I believe it's 25 or 26, right? It's on his hand.
No, it's on it.
It's on his palm.
It's like 43. It starts off, he's like number 43. And then, you know, the main guy is like, yeah, whatever. And then there's like Carnage. And then he's like, is that you, Kaneda? And I'm like,
Kaneda? Good God. You even pronounce it like an idiot. It's Kaneda.
So the way I said it again, yeah.
It's Kaneda.
Then he shows up and then I'm like, what? And then, I don't know. Who are the police with? Because the police seem to be with one of them. Like,
yeah, just keep reading, my friend. Just keep reading, my friend. There's Kaneda and Tetsuo are the two main characters. Then Akira will show up later on.
I didn't even know the book had anything to do with Kaneda, so that's another curveball.
Did you think Akira was the guy in the front of the box? The kid on the bicycle? No. The kid on the motorcycle?
No, I thought like that was like a collective name for the Garda over there or whatever.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, just keep reading. But to stick with the theme of this conversation, apparently, Roxanne Modafari fights Macy Barber at UFC 246. Fellow weeb. Obviously, you watched the Ryzen card with and the Bellator Japan card where Michael Venom Page walked out with the Naruto gear and the Hidden Leaf Village headband and the knife. Roxanne Modafari has been one of the longtime opponents of anime. She's wearing the Dragon Ball Z wig. Israel Adesanya does the Rock Lee pose. He did the Death Note. And he summoned the Spirit Bomb against Robert Whittaker. He did the Naruto run before he fought Brad Tavares. And, of course, I can't forget Alex Caceres, who's one of the original OG weebs of the UFC. We're everywhere, and we're not going anywhere. Again, I'm not a bad dude, but those guys are bad dudes. And Roxanne Modafari fights Macy Barber, UFC 246. I know Pete already said it's pretty much a veteran versus a prospect. I believe Roxanne Modafari has more fights in like the last like 2 years than Macy Barber has in her entire career. I think she has. So Roxanne Modafari might have more fights in the UFC / The Ultimate Fighter than Macy Barber's had in her entire career. So I love that fight. I think that fight is flying under the radar. I believe that's the featured prelim fight, and I'm very excited for that scrap.
Absolutely. Maybe Roxanne can tell me like a few things, you know, because I feel like
that'd be a good video.
I think you're very aggressive with the way you're trying to teach me here. Yeah. Like I don't need that like kind of energy. I need to like an arm around me. You know, sure. I was always more like, come on, Petey, like we know you're the greatest of all time. Just show us. And I'm like, all right then. And that's when I do my shit.
I know. I'm like, Petey, just because you're always drunk, you have bad hair, you have bad hair, you're not the greatest looking guy. Elaine's only around you because she hasn't met anyone else in her life. It's no reason for you to feel bad that you can't read comic books.
It's actually the way I keep Elaine is by getting the dog. Therefore, right. It's like a child and she can't leave now.
Well, there you have it, folks. Mike Bond says, I was the one who first mentioned it, set it up. So yeah, Mike Bond, come find me, UFC 246 Fight Week if you're there. If not, come find me.
Someone was talking that kind of shit to me. I just walk up and loaf them as soon as I saw them.
How about when you see Mike Bond, you just go up and push him over? Let's tabletop him.
I'm not fighting your wars for you, right? Just take your beating like a man.
I ain't taking no beating. Anyway, I'm Jose. That's Pizzi. We'll see you next Wednesday when we're actually in Las Vegas for the A-Side. We'll be sitting next to each other, trying not to get hands on each other. Casey might have to sit between us so we don't come to blows in Las Vegas. Pete, yeah. You can't get drunk that early over in Las Vegas. I believe it's going to be 10 a.m.
Who says I can't?
That's true. Pete does.
Is that a challenge?
Is that yeah, that is a challenge. We're going to have to do A-Side Live right into open workouts, and Pete's going to be like, where am I? Just like stumbling around Las Vegas. But for Jose, that's Pete. We'll see you next week in Las Vegas.
See you.